Welcome to the Dental Implant Podcast with your host, Pav Kara, your source of knowledge for all things relating to dental implants. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you learned something valuable. I hope.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Dental Implant Podcast. I'm excited to have a friend and colleague, Dr. Ali Virani, joining me today. Ali and I, we've known each other for a number of years, haven't we? So
Do you remember when we first met, Pav?
I actually don't know. When did we first meet?
I think it was at one of the trade shows, and they had a lecture stand, and you were giving a talk on bone metabolism. And yes. At the time I was doing some work with the ADI, and we were running a young dentist program. And yes. I was passing by. I think you were maybe, it was a company that you were speaking for, but you talked about bone instead of talking about products. And it's the first talk I've listened to in a long time that wasn't product specific or brand specific. And yes. It blew me away. It was awesome. And that's how we first met. And then we bumped into each other loads since then.
Yeah, we just keep bumping into it. And it's nice. This is what happens is you end up within a community. And, you know, the more that you do this type of stuff, you have certain pathways that, you know, you have certain colleagues that you build good friendships with because you just grow at the same rate. And you are kind of like one of these people. So, yeah, we have known each other a number of years. Thanks for reminding me on that. I just remember that now, actually. Yeah. So, I mean, Ali, what effectively we're getting to is I've always tried to be independent. Yes, of course, I work with certain companies, but I tell them square to their face, I don't like this about your product. I do like this about your product. And to be honest, it's actually one of the reasons why a lot of companies don't want to work with me, because they're just like, you know, you can't talk about the bad stuff. It's like, why not? We have to. We're clinicians. You know, I'm not part of your company. And one of the things that Ali and I were speaking about over the last couple of weeks since my previous podcast with Bill is, firstly, I think it was a very important podcast, but Ali messaged me afterwards. He goes, dude, that was a bit downtrodden. I was like, okay, well, let's do an uplifting one instead, because he was right. On reflection, it was a little bit, oh yeah, don't do this, don't do that. But, you know, there's always the other side of the coin, and that's what we wanted to talk about today with you. Okay, so in a moment, I'm going to let Ali introduce himself, because I've seen Ali's career grow over a number of years. He's doing some absolutely phenomenal work. He is committed to excellence, and he does not mind investing in his practice, in his team, in the equipment that he needs as well. And because of that, the work that he does is absolutely top notch. It's wonderful to see, my friend. So one of the things that we wanted to get to today, and we'll get onto this as soon as Ali's introduced himself, is that, you know what do you want to do if you want to learn to place implants? So again, you know, last time it was a little bit cautionary, whereas today we're going to be a bit more inspiring for those of you who either want to start or want to progress your career. So Ali, if you wouldn't mind first just introducing yourself to those listening.
Yeah, and actually, if I can add to that, the irony is that you and Bill are the most optimistic, positive, inspiring people in the industry, and it just shows that you could talk about it from any angle you want, really. And I just wanted to mention that, because if people haven't met Bill, they might think that Bill's grumpy or something based on that. No, but actually, Bill's the guy who will help anyone with anything and always look at the positives. Bill's had a big influence on my career, actually. So I was in general practice until 2019. I was doing a few implants, but not as many as people who do implants. And, Bill actually said to me, hey, do you want to come work for me? And it was, you know, he was talking about a 6-month time frame and the possible transition his practice was going through. And it made me realize that I wanted to just do implants. So, it also made me realize that I didn't want to wait 6 months. So Bill was probably the catalyst for me leaving general dentistry and leaving to just do implants. So for a while, I drove around doing implants, went to 7 practices. At the time, I had my diploma from the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. And then after being in that for a while, being a peripatetic surgeon, I realized I wanted more. So I did my MSc. And opportunity came to take over a practice that was a 2-year-old squat general practice. And it was a friend of mine wanted to get out. So We went in, rebranded it as an implant practice, and we've been there for 4 years now and slowly wound down my traveling. And so I'm full-time implants, but now it's in one building.
That, mate, that must be nice. I'm still working out of God knows how many practices. I lose track of where I'm going on a day-to-day basis.
But so, you know, I mean, it's funny because I was speaking to a colleague who does that, and I think there's different types of people. And it used to drive me crazy not to have everything standardized down to the nurse I work with. But I have a colleague who his nurse doesn't have to do much because he just does everything for himself and he's really self-sufficient. So where do you fall on that scale?
Me, I've said before, mate, I am extremely lazy. Okay. So when I say extremely lazy, I get my nurses to do as much as what we can. Sorry, I've just realized that the camera is a little bit blurry. So for those watching on YouTube, sorry about that. not only do I delegate as much as what I like, but my nurses prefer that as well because it makes them feel more valued as well. But in addition to that is I want my processes to be as efficient as possible. Okay. So I'm now at a point where what I'm trying to do in certain cases is place the implant and the definitive crown at the same visit. It's not something that I recommend for most people. Okay. Cause that we're using very advanced processes, protocols. I understand the biology to a very deep level, but why am I trying to do that? Because A, that's what the patient wants, but B, I don't want to have the patient back 10, 20 times to finish off a treatment. And if I'm not doing that, what I'm trying to do is streamline the process enough. So quite often what I'll do is at the time of implant placement, if possible, I will take a scan to have the crown ready so that I'm getting everything done in two visits. And again, one of my arguments for that is from a biological point of view, the one abutment, one time concept. So, yeah. when you say to me, you know, Pav, you know, how self-sufficient are you? I'm not. I like my nurses to do pretty much everything for me. My support team is absolutely fantastic. And without them, I wouldn't be able to operate. So that's the way that I work.
Do they come with you?
No, they don't, unfortunately. So because I work out of a number of different practices, and the issue that I then have is the nurses in different practices will do differing degrees of the workflow. So I've got one practice which is absolutely superb and they are on the point with everything and I can delegate virtually everything. Then I have other practices where I need to do most of it myself. But again, because I've tried to streamline my workflow as much as what I can, that's still not an overly complicated process for me. But I will still aim to delegate out as much as I can. So if I do the consent letters, I'll send it out to the team. I'll get them to send it out to the patients and they are following up with the patients. So I'm still trying to delegate as much of what I possibly can. So the downside of being a peripatetic surgeon is that lack of consistency. And sometimes it can be a problem where I get bits of instruments going missing and, you know, it's caused knock-on effects on the following day or there's all sorts of issues that can come with that. So if I was in one place, it'd be really nice. But I'm not in that position like yourself or Bill where I can be out of one practice doing implants all the time. That's what I'd like to get to over the next 2-3 years, but I'm not there yet. I'm working out of a number of different clinics. But I'm happy because I'm just doing implants. You know, I don't want to be doing the general dentistry work.
And I think it's interesting because I think one of the biggest things that people who want to go out and go implants full time, they think that it's a clinical issue. And of course it is. But once you get to a certain point where you're doing enough, it's not the clinical things that are the barriers. It ends up being all this stuff that you learn when you're traveling around, you know? So I think one of the most valuable pieces of mentorship you can get if you're getting into implants is to learn how to be a traveling implant surgeon and to learn how to get around all of these issues to do with different teams and different buildings and standardizing things, because it's an expensive way to learn if you have to learn by your own mistakes instead of all those people who've come before you.
Yeah. And let's touch back on something that we were saying just before we started this as well. So before we get to that, the other downside of being a peripatetic surgeon as well is particularly earlier on in your career, because you're happy to travel whatever distance, whether it's a 4-hour drive, 5-hour drive. And I did this, you know, I used to live in Yorkshire and I'd come down to London twice a week to work. And I'd either have to take the train, which is 3.5 hours each direction, and then, you know, another 45 minutes in the tube, or I'd have to drive down, which is, you know, 4-hour drive, something like that. And then if you place an implant 2 weeks later, the healing abutment comes off. you've got to go back just to place that heating abutment because nobody else in the practice is going to do it. So, but one thing that we were discussing about is, you know, off the back of the discussion that we had with Bill last time, you know, how can people be successful? How can they generate a successful career? And one thing that I've said before, Ali, and what I'd like your feedback on this because this is my own mentality. You may have a different idea, but for me, I can tell who's going to be successful by their mindset, by how they think. Because I get some delegates or some people come to me for mentoring, and what they do is they'll turn around and say to me, but I'm in the wrong practice. My practice owner won't let me do this. They don't want me to place implants. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. And then I get other people where they come and say to me that, you know, my practice won't let me do this, but screw them. I'm going to buy the stuff myself, or I'm going to do this, or, you know, if they won't let me do it, I'm going to hand in my notice and go to another practice. This is what I'm saying is that for me, if you've got the right mentality, and that mentality is, I'm going to learn to place implants no matter what I have to do. If I've got to graft, if I've got to get up 4 o'clock in the morning to get to the right practice, that's what I will do. So Ali, for me, in my mind, having that right mindset is absolute key. Would you agree with me? Have I missed anything?
No, I totally agree. And actually it's, you know, the people, I completely agree, because the people who have these barriers turn them into opportunity. So the principal saying no to buying these things, I'm going to buy it and renegotiate my percentage, or I'm going to buy it and then I'm going to be able to travel with it. Or, you know, they're not converting implants for me, so it's an opportunity for me to do some of my own marketing. And it's a, I completely agree. And I think this is a bit controversial, but I'm going to say that I think now is the easiest time for a young person to get into implants, because I think the ratio of people with that mindset is the lowest it's been. Having taught in universities, having been in education, I'm seeing personally, maybe it's just what I've seen, but a lot of the people in education have, when we've had a chat, have said, actually, I think you're right, that there are fewer people willing to put in before they take out. And so if you're someone who's willing to invest in yourself and put in time and effort and say, you know, Pav, I'll come with you. I'll carry your bags. I'll do your planning. I'll deal with your labs. Please, once a week, let me come do this. You're going to go, okay, fine, cool. But that was something that a while ago, everyone was offering to do and everyone was hungry for it. And now it seems like that's happening less. And so I agree that you can tell straight away who's got the attitude. But I also think that if the young people that have that attitude, even where there's a shortage of associates or whatever else is being said in the industry, I still think they stand out so much more now. And there is such huge opportunity to do well if you're the type of person who is positive and hardworking and willing to put in before you're asking to take out.
Yeah, that I really like that, because that's exactly what I did. So when I was learning to place implants, I was taught by Rich Brookshaw. And Rich he's absolutely, I mean, he's phenomenal. I mean, he does like all on four. He was doing all on four, like when I learned with him, like 12, 15 years ago, whatever it was, he was doing them pretty much every single day, popping out. And like any good surgeon, he was making it look so, so, so easy. And what I would do is, because Rich would work weekends, bank holiday, Mondays, not a problem for him. And what I would do is I would take time off when I had my own practice to go and nurse for him. And I'd say to him, I will sedate your patients free of charge to you. I just want to watch you. And I want you to talk me through the cases. And that's what he did. And I would, you know, if I had a day full of patients, I'd move them to the next day, move them around. If there was a golden opportunity for me to go see something, that's exactly what I would do. So I'm glad we're in unison on the mindset aspect. And what I would say to anybody listening is that mindset is true of whatever you want to achieve in life. Okay. And it's not just dentistry, but you can apply it to, you know, if you're one of these weird ones that likes endo, you can apply it to endo as well. But if you have that mindset of, doesn't matter what happens, I will figure out a way to make this work, because it's only over when you quit Okay. Because what happens is when you want something from life and you start down a certain road, life is going to test you. And how does it test you? It tests you to see if you're serious. So it will throw up problems for you to solve. And if you stop at that first hurdle, life, the universe turns around and says, you're obviously not serious. Therefore, I'm not opening the next gate for you. And this often happens when you start placing implants. What happens is your implant positions are all over the place. You have failures because you don't have the correct surgical skills yet. And if you think to yourself, you know, I'm having a lot of failures, I'm not going to bother with this anymore. That's it. It's game over. So I'm glad we see eye to eye in that. So,
and actually, to add to that, Pav, that process never stops, right? You might be 1 or 2 millimeters off in the beginning, and now we're talking about, oh man, if that was 1 degree, 2 degrees, whatever. You just, the fun of what we do is that the attitude that gets you to the point where you're doing this every day is the same attitude that means nothing will ever really be good enough. And yes, that's the fun, that it never becomes just completely predictable. It's never 100%. And when you go from 10% failures to 2% failures or whatever you're on, you want to figure out that percentage and how you get that to perfect. So that's the thing I really love about this, but it is, like you say, a self-filtering process where if you're not going to have that attitude, you won't make it. But this process trains that attitude into you, and the evolution of our profession and everything that's changing in implant dentistry means that serves you well, and it will be a daily process then.
I think there's a couple of more important points for me. Let me say them both now quickly before I forget, because then we can circle back to them. One is letter chasing. The other one is trying to do things which are too complex before you're ready for them. So if I forget one of them, mate, let's come back to that.
Yes.
So before, you know, and one thing that I've said is it's very easy for colleagues like yourself and myself to turn around and say the letters don't count for much because we have the letters. But you know what? When I was doing my MClin Dent, I was chasing those letters and it was important to me. So I understand why it's important to a lot of people as well. That said, what I will say to those listening, patients couldn't care less. Because patients don't know. Patients don't understand the difference between an RCS diploma, a certificate, an MClin Dent. They don't understand. It's when patients come in to see you, there's only two things that are going through their mind. The first thing is, do I believe that this person can do the treatment for me? Okay. Secondly is this person going to look after me? Do I trust them? Those are the two things that come to the patient's mind.
Yeah.
And I've had it before in my younger days where I was showing patients my certificates and just going, look at my certificates. And I found out on a forum that one student came out to see me when I was doing ortho and things like that. She turned around and said, this guy is just interested in shoving his certificates down your throat. He didn't listen to a word I was saying. And that hit me right here because I was like, oh, and that was a real eye opener for me. So what's really important, and Ali, I know that you're good at this, okay, is patient communication will unlock so much more for your career than what letters after your name will do. I'm not saying don't chase the letters. I'm saying develop those soft skills first. Would you agree with me on that statement? Have I missed anything out?
So I agree, but I think there's a couple of circumstances that are making young dentists more aware of the letters. And I think there are kind of a couple of things that, you know, have been part of my career too, which is my first job, full-time implants. I actually went for an interview with Portman and they had a position available because, Tharish, had left a practice and he does a huge number of implants, really good surgeon. And, they wanted to know which qualifications I had. Portman wanted to know in order to make sure that they were bringing someone in. So I think corporate positions, especially, It's a box to tick there. So to get into practices. And then the second thing is indemnity, we're suddenly interested to know. And I don't know if it's going that way or if that was just a particular indemnity company that I spoke to. But it suddenly made me very aware. And, I was glad I had my diploma at the time. My diploma ticked all the boxes. So later my master's was there for me because I wanted to firstly learn more, but secondly, go through a structured program, because I'd just taken exams and I wanted to make sure that I had ticked all the boxes for me to make sure I'd been through a proper curriculum. But I think there's external pressures now. I completely agree with what you're saying. The patient in front of you will not care about these things at all. But I think it can open the doors to get into a position to sit with the patient in front of you in some circumstances now.
So what we're saying is getting letters after your name is kind of like it's an intermediate step in my mind. Okay. Again, I'm not trying to dissuade from anybody from doing it, but the reason why I'm saying this, Ali, is because I've had a lot of delegates who've joined my academy where they've done other diplomas, they've done MSCs, and they're like, I feel like I should know and I should be really confident with implantology, but I'm not. Yeah. And then when they start with me, they're like, you know what, Pav, I love the detail that you go into. All that stuff that I didn't understand makes sense now. And this is what I'm saying is it's not just that. You can have as many letters after your name. If you don't have the interpersonal skills to be able to speak to patients, and for me, it always comes down to doing what's right for the patient. You know, I saw a patient last week. She needed to have both arches treated. Full mouth. Okay. She only wanted the uppers doing. And I just turned around and said to her, if you just want the uppers doing, I don't want to treat you, and spend your money another way. Treat yourself to a really nice holiday. And it's always putting that patient first. And patients will actually pick up on that. Patients know when you're in it for the money or whether you're in it to look after them. Okay. The next thing that I was alluding to as well, I think I was alluding to this. I lose my train of thought too. I've got too many things going on in my mind. But there is an element of luck included with this as well. And that comes in from a point of it's okay having the theoretical knowledge. If you are not applying it and you're not doing this on a day-to-day basis, it comes back to what I've discussed on a number of occasions, muscle memory. So when I first started to place implants, I thought to myself, what's the cheapest I can place implants without actually losing profit on any implant? And I found out that that number was £1,400. So I put out an advert in the local paper, restored implant for £1,400. Mate, I did 52 implants in a month. And this was from a cold start. And this was just my mindset that I have to, it's not about the earning at the moment. I have to learn. Yes. And if you've got the theoretical knowledge and you're not applying it, what's the point?
So that comes straight back. It comes straight back to the attitude, isn't it? You were doing what you had to do to pick up and develop these skills. And you weren't thinking, well, the problem is you go through any program and you come out the other end of the program. And a lot of people think, right, I've paid all this money. I want to recoup my investment. But it's like your driving license. All you've got is the license to now properly learn how to do it. You're safe. You're not competent. And I think that kind of touches on the other point, which is that 10 years ago, it would have been these big institutions with the reputation and everyone's going wherever to this university or this postgraduate institution to get these diplomas and these MSCs. And we're seeing them come out the other side. And maybe a lot of these courses, they might have placed one implant. They might have had the same dogmatic teaching from 20 years ago without really concentrating on things like metabolism that we know are the most important things. So I think the beauty of today, one of the best things about being a young dentist today and looking at your opportunities in implant dentistry is looking at the number of independent courses, the type of people teaching them, and the opportunity to do courses and have mentorship, and then to build on those courses with other courses. And you might go spend a year with one clinician, then you might go spend a week with another clinician. And these are the top guys. The courses like you run and the feedback that I've heard about it, the beauty is that there are courses that aren't just tick box with an institution that's trying to make ends meet within a big budget. There are people who really love this, who have like studied the intricacies of it and are adding their experience. And then on top of that, they're not saying, okay, you get one implant patient. They're saying as part of this course, we'll come to you and help you build your skills in your setting and get you set up. And I just think that all of that together, all of that, it's not one thing anymore. It's not get the qualification or go on the weekend course like it was 20 years ago. It's layers now. And it's people understanding that when they go down this path, it's like I'm not into cars, but it's like the people into cars. It's a bottomless pit of money for the thing you love. That's implant education.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not into cars. I'm into implants. everybody knows this already. But it's, I think the other thing that Bill and I had alluded to as well, something that we discussed as well, is people trying to do really complicated work really, really quite quickly. And again, something that Bill and I were saying is that, you know, we're now at that point in our career, I don't need to do the complicated stuff, mate. You know, is if I was given an option of a really complicated case or a day full of like really easy stuff, give me the really easy stuff, because per hour, that is way more profitable for me. You know, if you can imagine placing an implant and restoring it at the same visit in 45 minutes, you know, what I do with full arches, and on an hourly rate, it does not compare to that. Not even remotely. And I think people forget is the bread and butter stuff is quite often the most profitable.
So there's a really cool guy in the Southeast called Andre Hatting. I don't know if you've come across him. He's recently, his work is immaculate, right? But he's built his whole practice on one implant or two implants with a 3-unit bridge. His whole referral base, his whole practice, it's just him, beautiful building. That's all he does. So he's built his whole business on this. And the problem is, I think it's a social proof thing it's become now, like full arch, which is fine. But I agree with you that it seems like the more you know, the less you do. And, you know, the more comfortable you are with being yourself, you're going to say, this is the path for me. And within implants now, we're all kind of finding more and more niche places for us to be and surrounding ourselves with people who do other niche things. So it's not just implants being a subspecialty kind of thing. I know it's not a specialty in the UK, but in terms of what we invest in our education, and then we start just investing in a more and more niche thing. And I completely agree with you. I went on an incredible course with Andoni Jones recently, and I came away from that going, right, cool. I know what I need to do. I need to find someone who likes doing this stuff, because I do not have the patience for it. I don't want to do it. I don't enjoy it. But that's the beauty, is that you got to invest so much in your education to learn what you do and don't want to do. And then to get to a point where you have then a choice to say, you know what, actually, I'm going to visit the practice that my friend owns, because I know, going back to what you said, I know he's a nice guy. He has a vested interest, so he'll line up patients for me, which in a corporate with no principal, no one really cares. So he has a vested interest. And I know that if I speak to him on the phone and I say, can you just tighten that healing abutment? He'll do it for me. He won't say that's not my problem. And so walking into a practice where you've got lots of singles lined up, really well consented, looked after patients, you're looked after in the few weeks you're away, that is gold. But everyone's looking for the practice that's going to give them, I'll visit once a month. It's a 5-hour drive. I'll do all this complex work. And then all I'm going to do is have these sleepless nights over it. The dream is to just put in these singles beautifully and just to know that someone's got your back around there.
And again, Ali, you know, we're talking about making our lives simple and profitable, right? So, you know, I did a podcast with Nick Fai a few months ago. And off the back of that, you know, most of my work's guided now. I'm just like, why did I not do this sooner? You know, so it's listening to people who've got the experience like Nick. Speak to Bill. Bill's like, yeah, most of my stuff's guided now. Most of my stuff's guided. Nick's stuff is 100% guided. You know, when I say most of my stuff, I now mean like 98%. You know, I'll get the occasional case where it's like really super, super easy. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll do this one freehand, because it might be that the patient's on a tight time frame. So we need to get it in, as opposed to wait for lab work to come back. But the vast majority of my work now, mate, is it is guided. And it's taken the stress out of my career.
Yes.
So, and you can't use that as a crutch, though. Here's the other thing, and this is what Nick says as well. It's a double-edged sword, right? So if all you can do is guided surgery, what happens when the guide breaks? It's not back on time, or it doesn't fit. Yep. Something goes wrong. I've had that happen to me plenty of times.
Yeah.
You know, then what do you do?
Yeah, sorry, Pav. No, I was mentored by people who had a lot of beliefs, and there's no space for beliefs in implant dentistry. We've got plenty of evidence now for everything. And it's becoming more robust. People who didn't believe in guided surgery, people who didn't believe in immediate loading. And you realize that a lot of people don't believe in things that they don't understand. And that's how they protect themselves from having to learn. They want to do the same thing they've done for 20 years for the last 10 years of their career and walk away from it. And I went through this this process of having, I'm just looking at the lab work and I'm like, the lab have done a really good job with what I've given them, but that could have been better. That could have been better. And so I learned how to use guided surgery, and I used it, and I had problems with guides. And I realized, well, hold on, like in critical cases, I'm having problems. And the beauty of the way things are evolving is that we're getting so many technological solutions now. So it's been, we're coming up to October. It's been over a year now that I've been using dynamic navigation for every single case. And that was off the back of having a guide. I had this lovely patient referred, and I checked mouth opening at consultation. She was great, no problems. Soon as I got her numb and that guide went in on the mandible, and it was a case where it was, you know, close enough to the ID nerve where I wanted that guide in place. She couldn't tolerate any water. It was making her gag. She couldn't open wide enough now all of a sudden to get the drills in over the guide. And the guide had a problem with its fit. And just all those things put together, I was thinking there's got to be a better solution. And the beauty is, I mean, these solutions that started off as cumbersome or expensive, everything's only going in one direction now with tech. So for a year, I've been able to do freehand, but with a CT in front of me showing where I am inside of the patient. And now my lab work is, you know, there were a lot of angled screws being used at one point, you know, and I'm not ashamed to say, like, I went through it as a dentist where I audited my work and I said, I'm not as good a clinician as I wanted to be. And that's nothing to do with clinical skill. It's attitude. And it was getting like that with implants at one stage where I went, you know what? Is lazy accepting this? There are solutions. Either I'm going to have to learn something or other, but we can do better. We can do better than this. And the beauty for anyone getting into it now is there's so many options. I mean, you can be designing and printing guides in-house. There's so much you can do with it. You know, photogrammetry has come a long way. It went from one brand that has a 40 grand machine to, you know, within an intraoral scanner, potentially results we'll see what happens. But now we've got a workflow where in-house, we plan it and you can send work off anywhere in the world. And within an hour, you can have a wax up. Like that's amazing for $5, if you want to, that comes back. You've got dynamic navigation to put in the implant. So there's nothing to print. You then, with photogrammetry and a 3D printer, can deliver a full arch restoration. And you can take that down to singles now. So I just think, like, this is such a sad thing to say, but what a time to be alive, right? I think it's incredible the degree to which we can plan our cases so that we're safe and we can deliver those results. And the biggest thing is the satisfaction you get out of delivering the quality of work that you're proud of, which is the stages we went through to change our practice. But these guys have been so far ahead. People like Bill and Nick left egos at the door. And there's so many people go, I don't need it. I'm brain guided. And that's fine. But if we looked at all of our cases, even the guys who are phenomenal surgeons have amazing 3D spatial awareness. Really, every time you don't get close to something you don't want to or do something you'd rather not. You know, the guys who have the humility to go, you, Bill, Nick, who have been in this industry, who've done everything, have the humility to go, yeah, you know what? I use guides. That's not a thing to be macho about. It's a cool thing to be delivering accuracy, isn't it?
You know what? It's and unless you can sit there and go freehand and have the balls to put every single case on social media, then actually that tells you that something's not right. And this was the same with me. So this was a conversation that I had with Nick, because Nick was like, I'm not that good of a surgeon. He said, I'm not as good as a guide. And I was like, actually, you know what? You're right. You know, cause I was like, you know, I get a lot of cases when I was going brain guided where, you know, a lot of cases I could write on social media that, you know what? Oh yeah, I did this guided. And people like, oh wow, what a great result. I was like, haha, I didn't do it guided, it was freehand. But that's just 3D spatial awareness. But what about what about the other cases where it's like you think it goes pinpoint perfect, you take your post off radiograph, you're like, what the hell's happened here? And then the lab struggles, and then this happened there. And ultimately it's the patient that suffers, yes. Right? And that's what we need to eliminate. So I think in addition to having the right mindset, is looking into the correct technologies to augment your care, but not be used as a crutch in substitute of skills. Does that make sense?
And, you know, I absolutely agree. And I think the only way to do that is with stepwise mentorship. I don't see a way around it, because if you want to go on a course for whatever it is, a year, and then go, I'm not investing at all, I'm just going to sit there, I'm going to buy a 3D printer, print guides, and just do surgery, then that's not going to help you to progress to that point where you're actually in control of what's going on. It's a false sense of control. And when something goes wrong, it all goes out the window, right? And I think that the last few years, I think it's become more evident, you know, with the FGDP UK guidelines on implant mentorship, with more people talking about it. Fine, we have a shortage of mentors. Yes. But actually, there's way more people willing to properly mentor. Not just you come in, you watch me work, I'll sign off your cases, but really, I will spend time with you. I will help develop you personally and professionally. And that's a huge investment, right? And actually, it doesn't matter how expensive young dentists think mentorship is. The person who's providing the mentorship is not doing it for the money and will never recoup the fees. It's not what it's done for. It feels expensive at the beginning of your career, but actually that person's giving up a lot more to put all that in wholeheartedly. But the beauty of it is now, the top people in our profession are willing to give back because they really believe, they're really seeing that it's the only way that people are going to get to that point. It's the only way I got to that point. I'm sure you can think of people who have changed your career spending time with them. You've spent time with the best. And so I completely agree with you. I just think that as part of the conversation of don't allow guides to be your crutch, we should also say the only thing that should join the gap between a young dentist who's starting out in implants and getting to a point where they're really enjoying it and finding their niche and doing cool work is finding a mentor and B, a community, because otherwise the burden's just too much for one person. And those people in those communities are out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think the other thing that I wanted to mention with regards to mindset as well is, again, this is a little bit, I think it's more take your career step by step as opposed to trying to take a huge leap all in one go. Because one of my delegates is, you know, she owns a practice, absolutely beautiful practice, and she's a great surgeon. She, you know, she can do full arch herself, and she had somebody apply for a job. This person who applied for a job is 3 years out of university, in the middle of an implant certificate, and their attitude was, "I just want to do implants, and by just want to do implants, I mean I only want to do full arch. I don't even want to do the singles, you know." And that again is the wrong attitude to have, because the chances of you doing just full arch are actually really quite remote. And what tends to happen is the higher that you get in your clinical experience, politics starts to play a role in it as well. There's a lot of politics that come in, you know, and you don't want to tread on certain people's toes, and, you know, and there's certain things where it's just like, I don't want to do. But people forget that, you know, again, the single implants right at the bottom. Sorry, mate. It's just a little one. I love you too. It's the single implants, or the right, or like you say, you know what Andre does? We're like just two implants and a bridge per hour. That's the most profitable. And you know what? If you have a complication, it's a way easier to fix than if you're doing full mouth. So I think it's having the right mental attitude, and it's tempered in the correct context. When you have
taking one step,
find success.
Yeah, but I take it one step before the singles. You know, we're saying do the singles before you do the full arch. Man, do 5 years of general practice in one spot before you stop doing general dentistry, because there's nothing more humbling than seeing your fillings 5 years later, your onlays. That's where I learned the most, is watching my work fail, being in one practice for 8 years at the beginning of my career, and realizing that all the small things, all the little things, reading the bottle of the primer, you know, this is the minutiae that it comes down to, is that you don't just watch someone do it and then do it. You read into your own stuff and make sure. Because then when it comes back, the problem with someone being 3 years qualified and wanting to go into, even just into implants, forget full arch, it's just like the most I learned in dentistry was through my own screw ups right at the beginning. So I just think I agree with you. There's no rush to do all of this, but the people who are really good at what they do, they have the depth. They've done a lot of things to a really good level, and they've taken all those lessons and brought it in. And then you can work as part of a team. But if you don't understand perio and restorative, you don't stand a chance with implants and surgery, just taking teeth out. How many teeth do you have to take out before you know how to take teeth out? It's loads.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think as well, let's call it 5 years that people are going to be doing stuff. I'm also a great believer that if people want to start the implant journey early on in that career, that's fine, because there is so much to learn, right?
Yes.
So what you can do is you can stay in general practice, stay in one place, but start the learning process. You know, because I've spoken to a number of people where they turn around and say to me, Pav, I'm about to start my DFT year. I want to be placing implants in 5 years down the line. What should I be doing? I said, firstly, start your theoretical training now. I said, I'm not saying start placing implants, but start the theoretical training now so that you start learning about implants sooner rather than later. I said, and if you're in a big practice, I said, go around to every single dentist in the practice and they will love you for this. So just turn around to every single one of them, turn around and say, I want to do all your extractions, every single one of them. Even if you don't get paid, but the other person still gets paid, just say, just want the experience.
Yes.
Because when I was younger in my career, I hated extractions, mate. Obviously now it doesn't bother me, but earlier in my career, I was just like, I hate extractions. And if I had somebody turn around and say to me, I want to do all your extractions, I'd be like, yeah, take the lot. And you imagine being in a practice with 3, 4, 5 dentists and you're doing all the extractions.
Yeah.
How quickly are you going to get damn good at extractions?
Yeah.
Mindset.
And this is the putting in before you take out, because these things, it feels like a long time, but you do that for a year, you do that for 3 years. Like, you know, we don't remember who we were 3 years ago. If you're developing every day, it's a different person. That time, it feels like a big investment at the time, but every job I've done, every practice I've traveled to, the things that I learned, things I took away from there, they're just like such a small building block over time. They're getting smaller and smaller, and it opens all these opportunities. But the problem is, like you said, if you stay in your comfort zone, that's not how you're going to get there.
No.
And actually, like, this is the beauty right now is, you don't need to run before you walk. You can have a good mentor, and you don't have to have this mentor with you every day or week. You know, there's plenty of people who will call me and say, everything's fine. I can do all of these cases. But for example, the things that start to get a little bit more complex, oh, I've got a single tooth to immediate load, or there's a patient who needs a lateral sinus lift. Now, traditionally, I refer these to other people, but I want to do them. So I'll just set up a day. This person saying to me, I'll just line up a day and get a mentor for that day. Someone to be there with you and do bits and you do bits. My goodness, what price can you put on that? Because once you've immediate loaded a central incisor once with someone, you can now safely do that on your own. You might have problems and need troubleshooting. You might chat to your mentor like a pre-chat. But there's some things that once you've done them a couple of times and you've got that person on the end of the phone, you're fine. So the investment needs to be, okay, look, these things are beyond my competency right now, but I'm not far off. I'm going to get my mentor in to have chats about it. And I'm sure you do this. You'll sit with people and you'll say, listen, this is a little beyond where you are now. Or, hey, you can do this. I'll chat you through it now, but you don't need me. You know, we've done these cases together. You're great. Just remember A, B, and C. And if there's a problem, phone me. Yeah. And I think that means that people can get into it safely without worrying, as long as they stop thinking about the money at the offset, because it will come. If they get really good, they're never going to go hungry.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to what you were saying, Ali. You gave me a great analogy. I'll tell you this in a second. But you have to put in before it comes back to you. And the amount of blood, sweat, and sacrifice that goes in, if you're not prepared to put in that, you're definitely not going to get out. And it's like, this is the analogy. Tell me if you like this or not, all right? It's like me going to the kitchen, okay, taking out flour, butter, eggs and sugar and going, why isn't this a cake yet? Because I've not made the mix, I've not put it into the oven, I've not spent time with it, I've not honed my skills in making cakes. You can't just go and pull out the ingredients and go, why is this not a cake yet? You know, you Absolutely. Have to put in first. And when you get it out afterwards, once you've built these skills, they are yours for life.
Yes.
I think this is really important. Once you, once, once you have built these skills, they are yours for life. That's really important.
Completely. And it's very different to, look, you go mentor someone, right? You will teach them, and you might teach them one small thing, right? One thing about bone that they can apply to every implant that they use. Thus forever. What price can you put on that, the snowball effect of that one piece of knowledge, of all the doors it will open and all the things that will change clinically? Learning.
Ali, you taught me about slow drilling. You know, you taught me about slow drilling on a phone conversation. It was a 20-minute phone conversation. I remember this because I remember you were doing it and I was like, what's this you're about? And you said to me, this is what I'm doing. This is the reasoning why I'm doing it. Here's the evidence behind it. Completely transforms the way that I do all my implants now. So my implants are either slow drilling or lucid or lucid burst. You know,
that's awesome.
There's no in between. So sometimes mentoring is just having a conversation with a mate. But
it's the community.
It's so curious.
Yes, it's the community, and also it's all of us being open to the things. You know, you've talked about, oh, you know, I was going freehand, and then all my implants weren't perfect. I've said the same thing. If we're all trying to build ego in our communities, then this doesn't happen. But if we all talk about our difficulties and how we're trying to overcome them, and not one person is not having some difficulty in their professional life at any moment, something, it could be trivial, it could be something so small. It could be anything as small as I'm struggling to get on with my nurse. It could be as big as my implants are all failing. It can be anything in between. But if we have these communities where we look after each other and we talk openly and we share solutions, I think there's more and more communities like that, because we're all realizing that actually, you know what? We're not that special. Implants don't make you that special. You're not a brain surgeon or a heart surgeon. I'm sure they say that about what they do. But the humility and the community is what's making it so that there's more and more of the right type of people, in my opinion, leading the way in the field, being the educators, running courses, and then truly looking after people, not saying, I'll teach you everything. And then you go on their course and they say, oh, by the way, there's 5 more courses if you want to get to the point where you can do an implant on your own. They're saying, come and I'll give you everything inside my soul that I've learned. Ask me as much as you want, because I want you to succeed, because my pride is not in how much money I can make off you. My pride is in when you're doing it on your own, you'll remember me.
I'll tell you what humbles me, mate, is like sometimes I'll do a really complicated case, or I remember like the first zygote case I did, first subperiosteal frame. I was like, wow, you know, aren't I phenomenal with my surgical skills? And then about 2 days later, I was speaking to, or I saw a case by a friend of mine who's a MaxFax consultant in the States. And what this guy does on a regular basis, he'll do a hemisectomy of the maxilla or take away like 3/4 of the maxilla because of cancer. And at that same visit, he'll place between 4 and 8 implants into the patient's leg. Okay. He comes back 6 months later, harvests bone from the leg where the implants are already placed. He will rebuild the maxilla. He will do microvascular surgery to rebuild the blood supply to it. And he'll immediately load on the same day as well. And he does this on a regular basis. And I'm just looking at it going, what's the point of me doing implants?
We're like, so Mickey Mouse. We're so Mickey Mouse, but it's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
I love that. And I love having people like that in your community, because it's the same thing as the ADI a few years ago. They opened the conference with the guy who did the first facial transplant. An incredible implant guy, Howie Gluckman, spoke after him and was like, how do you follow that? Because it's all perspective, isn't it? You just go, oh, what's the point?
Yeah, it is. But I think this then falls back onto that we should be happy wherever we are within our, and we shouldn't feel the need to have to do more. Okay. So just because somebody's doing something more complicated to you, if you're really busy doing the simple stuff, or if you're really busy doing like 2-3 units, the occasional sinus lift, you don't have to progress to anything else, right? Is if you get 1 or 2 full arches coming in through your door per year, you won't build up the skills to be able to do full arches proficiently. They'll just cause you stress and headache. So I think for me, I want to try and summarize what we've discussed today, is the right attitude goes a long way, that we have to invest, and I still invest, mate. You know, I invest in my own education still. I still put in, if I want to get something out later, I still got to put in to build certain level of skills, okay? You have to put that in. You have to have a mentor when you're in that gray zone where you're, when you're pushing your boundaries. You called it a community. Bill called it a curry club, but it's the same thing that's come up again. Egos need to be left at the door, which is what Bill said. Bill said that we'll learn way more by discussing our failures than what we than what we will from discussing our successes. And understand that, you know, just because you're getting into implants doesn't mean you have to do everything that everybody else is doing. You know, if you're happy doing one thing and you're busy doing that, that's what it comes down to at the end of it.
I completely agree. And I guess I wanted to add to that, that I think the future is bright. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity. There are great clinicians and great courses that are helping build people up from zero, like your course. And I think that although people maybe with the way they're dealing with dentistry and the pressures of dentistry are putting themselves in difficult situations, they don't need to. And actually, you know, there's so much scope. We have an aging population in this country that are becoming more and more aware of implants, and relative to the rest of the world, are in a pretty good financial position. We have more and more people sharing within the UK who are in implants. And you know what? It's just over the next 10, 15, 20 years, the industry is only going to go one way. And if someone just comes into it for the long run, invests in themselves, as is positive and helpful and puts time in, goes to study clubs, goes on courses, whatever, there's no doubt they'll make it. I just see it as it's like a no-brainer. The industry's growing and they're going to need implant dentists. So I just think it's a good time for anyone who's young, who's really curious, to get this in their head about the long-term plan, rather than it being, okay, if I can do this in 2 years, I'll be doing full arches. It just won't go the way you think it will if you think about it like that.
If you have the right plan over the right time frame with the right attitude, right mentors and right community, then you will get little miracles happening throughout your career.
You nailed it, Pav. I 100% agree with that. Yeah.
Ali, we've been going best part of an hour. I really appreciate you taking your time because I know you were very busy today. And we were like, oh, can you record this day? Can you record that day? I can't do this day. So, you know, I really appreciate you carving out some time for us as well.
Pleasure. No, thank you for having me, Pav. It's flown by. The hour's flown by.
That's okay. And for those listening, Ali also has a podcast. Ali, tell us about your podcast as well so that people listening can listen to that as well.
Stand around on that one in terms of it's actually my colleague Flo's podcast that I'm part of. It's called Pearls, Two Generations in Dentistry. And it's kind of explores all aspects of dentistry, different guests, different things that we chat about. So, it's in its third season, and I think Flo's done an awesome job. Some really cool guests on there, just as much philosophy as dentistry in terms of how we stay happy in our careers. So, check it out. Thank you for the plug, Pav.
No worries. That's really important. Staying happy, because, you know, as we were talking about earlier as well, Ali, you know, is, you know, as much of a titanium nerd as I am, everything that I do in terms of learning, studying, application, putting it, is just for my family. It's for my wife and my daughter. That's it. Because they are the world to me, you know. And you know, we get obsessive about dentistry. But there's a reason behind it, you know, and if we don't have the right happiness across all aspects of our life, then what's the point? So that actually sounds like a really good podcast. I'll start listening to that as well. And I'll let you know what I think. So thank you very much.
Please do. Yeah. Thank you, Pav. Thank you.
Ali, thank you so much for joining me today. And for those listening, I've got some really, really cool guests coming on over the next few weeks as well. So I'll get these podcasts uploaded as soon as what I possibly can for you. I'll speak to you all later.